Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Monday, the 17th of May, recording at 6:49 British Summer Time. Well, first thing, just to briefly review those trades that I had out today, or that I one that I closed out, took the profit on the Euro-Yen. Now, you remember when I bought the Euro-Yen, if I go over this, it's not to boast about this thing. My last trade that I talked about was the stupid Nikkei position that I held too long and took the loss on Friday, unfortunately. Well, better late than never, as they say, because that eroded 5% of my approximately of my Nikkei gains over the previous year. But the Euro Yen trade, now you remember, I think I was buying when it got back down to the January low, because I was hoping that it would find support there, and indeed that was a possibility. And I mentioned at the time that the more conservative tactic, and it's generally better to back the more conservative tactic, which is why I'm reviewing it, was to wait for the upward dynamic. Now, the upward dynamic didn't occur. I mean, I came in basis spot at about 131.20, 131.25, as I recall, and not only did the Euro-Yen not hold near the January low, it hovered there for a couple of days and then had a big downward dynamic, marking a renewed descent, and I said I'd probably ride it out because it was getting oversold and overstretched and was within an overall range and approaching support. But then it worked right down to 126, and from that level in early April it then got the upward dynamic, and you can see that very clearly on the chart. And if you're interested in chart trading, it's a good one to look at. Very clear upward dynamic, and it's the first upward dynamic since the one that marked the surge to the high back in March. But an upward dynamic, a counter trend dynamic, is inevitably much more significant than one that reflects exhaustion at the end of the move and can't be sustained. Now, following, and at the time of that upward dynamic, I mentioned that that was the real buy signal, but that I would resist the temptation to double up on the contract because it was in a range overall. But part of the reason for going through and reviewing this is that I'm not displeased. Well, I'm sort of relieved with the profit that I took out of this. It was a five-figure profit, and I took nearly 6 yen out of the market. But the point I want to emphasize here is that even if it's a duff trade, and I regard this as a duff trade, you can still come out of these not on a wing and a prayer, just by hoping, but it provided the original thinking, the technical and fundamental thinking behind the trade was reasonably sound, and I maintained all along that was reasonably sound, but it required the proof of the recovery to bear that out for me. So as I say, you don't have to get the market timing exactly right to succeed in this environment, but you do have to be on the right side of the overall directional move. In other words, to contrast this, say in stock markets, if one had been shorting from May of last year on upwards, I mean, clearly one would have been on the wrong side of the directional move. It would have been a complete disaster if one had been buying over the last 2 months aggressively in stock markets. That too would be looking like a serious problem in here today. Now, to go back to this chart, which you'll see, it then produced a second upward dynamic in mid-April and then ranged for a while, a little bit choppy in the range, before then in late April producing this very, very consistent orderly move, which has sort of gained speed in here today. Now, had I held off, as say the alternative tactic on the way up, and I mentioned this on Friday, one tactic I'd pretty much set my sights on taking the profit as this moved up over the 136 level, And I said the alternative, and perhaps the more sound policy would be just to maintain the trailing stop. In other words, not trying to be too clever. I was coming out of the 136 level because I figured that it's probably going to encounter some resistance up near the higher side of the range, and that the odds would be worsening at that point. But it's surged, and as I speak here right now, it's at 137.44 on the spot. That would put the futures contract at about 130. Seven. So, also, I just mentioned that today's additional surge is probably unsustainable. So, anybody who followed me on that and survived the trauma of being sort of 5 cents out of the 5 yen rather out of the money, and now has a 6 yen or better gain in there might want to employ the discipline of the tight trailing stop at least. Okay, and then the FTSE position, well, just as that bounced up today, I added to that. I have been building up my stock market short positions as I've been able to protect them, trying not to take too many risks in this market overall. And I must say, these stock markets really look dodgy here. We had the big drop in India. I've mentioned that. The only thing I'll in the comment of the day, I've discussed that and illustrated it. The only thing I will add to that is that when I was in the gym this morning and I saw that huge drop, and then I noticed on the opening of the stock market, I like to watch a little bit of the what Peter Bennett calls the tout TV, because it keeps me in touch with what people are actually saying, and I like that from a behavioral standpoint. But I saw that the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Trust was top the table of the FTSE's biggest losers. Now I have that, I own that, and perhaps some of you do. Now I'd mentioned before that I was going to hold on to my Asian investments and my pension funds and ISAs because I had more than fully hedged it, albeit with asymmetrical hedges, by going short stock market futures, leveraged stock market futures positions. But this got absolutely hammered in here today with a sort of a delayed reaction to the election result. But I saw the J.P. Morgan Fleming India Trust, that's the investment trust. It's similar to the India Fund, which is traded on the I think it's on the New York Stock Exchange, and which is a closed-end fund. And I saw, I mean, the India Fund, which had been up, it shows how volatile these things can be. I think it peaked out at around 138 and a bit, and I saw it trading at 89. And so I then suggested to my wife that she put in a bid for some ISA funds of hers, and I was coming into the office to do the same thing. And with some additional money, so I sort of shot right back up to 98. Well, maybe that does come back, but what I'm saying here is that if I can generate profits on these leveraged shorts in the stock market futures during this reaction, something like India, which I think is a great, great long-term prospect, I am happy to go in and nibble at it on weakness, taking the gamble that India, with its long flirtation during Mahatma Gandhi's preference for the sort of little cottage industries with, you know, sort of Indian peasants with their own manually operated spinning wheels, that sort of thing, and then going through their whole Soviet economic model phase, really has finally embraced a more market-oriented system and benefited enormously from it. So it would be the mother of all own goals if they were to then revert to something completely useless in terms of generating economic confidence and growth. And hopefully they won't do that, and I'm willing to bet that they'll probably get it right, although maybe not as quickly as the BJP party might have. But we'll see. Okay, moving on to the stock markets generally here. This is a very scary environment for bulls, quite obviously. And I've mentioned, I think I mentioned in Friday's audio, my big picture audio, that this was an environment that could produce a crash. I wasn't predicting a crash. I mean, one doesn't predict, at least I don't predict crashes too often, but it was an environment that could produce that. Well, we saw certainly a crash of that Indian stock market today, and the way markets are moving downwards in these very consistent sort of down flag patterns that I discussed in here today. And I talked to the analysts, the StockCube analysts who are speaking to hedge funds all day long, some of the senior ones, and they say, well, their people all want to sell the rally. And if everybody wants to sell the rally, you remember deja vu all over again, because last May and June, I'd say, what are people saying? What are people saying? And they were all saying, well, they want to buy on setbacks. Well, if everybody wants to buy on a setback, you don't get the setback. You don't get the setback until people have finally jumped aboard, wearied of waiting, wearied of missing out, and just jump in. And then the market's no longer got a big pool of demand driving it up. And vice versa, if everybody wants to sell on a rally, you don't get much in the way of a rally, and we certainly haven't seen much in the way of a rally other than interday, and that just encourages people to hope that there might be a better recovery. So I think we have to wait until sentiment indicates that people are clearly short of the market overall. And then we'll want to be looking for some sort of bottom to form. But right now, I've been content to leverage up my short positions. Now, I did say I would change tactics a little bit here as we went forward, because I've now got quite a substantial short position for me, and almost all of it protected within in the money stops. I think it's only my latest FTSE position that's not protected within in the money stop. And I will now, from here on, if I see additional sharp moves on the downside, I will start to very lightly take a little bit of baby steps profit. And if it bounces intraday and isn't too oversold overall, in other words, if the downward trend that we've seen over the last few weeks, if that remains consistent, then I would replace. The FTSE gave a good opportunity for that, as did several of them. The S&P got down to 1372 and then bounced up to 1387. Well, those are swings that one can perhaps take advantage of if you're keeping a reasonable eye on the market, which I do, although I'm not hovering on it. I'm doing lots of other things, and we had our AGM, StockCube's AGM, in here today. Bet you didn't know that, or many of you knew that. StockCube's a PLC, publicly quoted company. Okay, looking at these markets, there's nothing that I see that suggests that we're about to get a bottom, although markets are full of surprises, but it would take central bank buying, I feel, to push Wall Street up. The news, which I've reviewed over and over again, remains mostly bad. The corporate profits are already in the market, and people are worrying that they're not going to be sustainable. They've got the interest rate problems. Things in Iraq are an enormous cause of concern, and Al-Qaeda seems to be ratcheting up some of the terrorist attacks generally. So there's an awful lot for people to worry about. Then they've got the uncertainty of the U.S. presidential election, so it's heavily weighed on the side of the negatives. But you remember we had that discussion about whether or not the Fed was intervening, or my monologue on whether or not the Fed was intervening last week, and they may indeed be doing that, and they may indeed come in here today, depending on where the market is. But right now, the Dow's down 96, S&P's down 10.5, NASDAQ Composite, which is leading, down 26, so that's the bigger percentage, down 1.4, whereas the others are just under 1%. We had, across the boards, except for the UK, 1% plus declines in Europe and bigger in Asia with the Nikkei and the Hong Kong Hang Seng Index. If I had any doubts about this being a serious correction, and I don't, one look at the Tokyo Second Section Index, and indeed the big downward keys and so on that we've seen on the Nikkei and the downward dynamics, would convince me that this was an important correction. Okay, bond markets still rallying in here. These are finally reacting in line with the oversold conditions. Remember, we had the key day reversal on U.S. Treasury bonds on Friday. That suggests to me that it'll push a little higher over the short term, and we're up nearly a point in here today, 105.10. That's up 30 ticks, and it's quoted in 30 seconds, so up nearly a point. As I speak on the U.S. 30-year bond, European bonds rallying accordingly, so are the JGBs, where I started reshorting a little bit prematurely in here, and I'll get a better crack at that in all probability. But the one that would interest me the most, I'd love to see a good bit of short covering here in the U.S. 30-year Treasury bond, or long buying, because if stock markets remain weak, this can rally higher. And if I see that rally then lose momentum, I'll be looking to short it again, because I maintain this is a top extension rally. Now, in the metal markets, I'm not playing this silver as anywhere near as cleverly as I, or as in as disciplined a fashion as I could. I'm a little bit cavalier in here, holding out for the better rally, feeling that the chart pattern was so overextended. And with euro dollar strengthening in here today, we're at 120 as I speak, a little above the 120 level. The dollar's weakening in here. So this is tantamount to an upward dynamic for the euro today, reaffirming some support near the 117.75 area. And where it was bouncing from that level all last week. That had pushed up most of the metals, although not all the gains have held. For instance, they were paired back. Gold closed at, or is trading right now at 379.65. That's up 3, but it was up at 383.5. Nevertheless, these are cheap, and they're in an accumulation area. The dollar's fate is crucial to all this, and I still can't say conclusively that the dollar's rally is over, but I've said in recent weeks that we've seen the best part of it by far. And as I say, it's softer in here today. Now, but the silver got up to as high as 590.5. I have got, that's on the July contract, and then flopped all the way back to close at 567.5. But any upside follow through on euro yen, and I think we'll see a firmer silver. And I do have scale up sell orders on my dollar positions, most of which were purchased beneath the $6 level, sort of from the 650 to 690 region. So I do have scale up orders in the market, but had I been using a really disciplined baby step strategy, I would have been taking positions out on these rallies to just under the $6 level. I did that once, but I could have done it at least three times in here, and then replenish on the setbacks. It lowers the overall average cost, but I haven't done it. Don't ask me why. Now, not because I'm not sure I know, but sometimes better with me at any rate to it's the do as I say rather than do as I do. Although for the most part I do exactly what I say, as you know. Okay, what else can I mention in here? Oil had a shakeout today. Got up to a new high, 41.85 on the spot price, NYME, but then pulled back to 40.80. So it was pulled back over a dollar, but has pushed. Wells regained some of that. Now currently 41.30 as I speak. So a little bit of profit taking in here, and that also happened on the natural gas as well. Last thing to mention, markets are nervous here, and while I maintain that these metals are cheap, I'm a little disappointed. I saw lead, for instance, a 3 months lead, which has a very good backwardation, but the 3 months position got up to 7.50. at one point this morning, but then closed back at 728, which is actually down $6 on the day. Fascinating when tin, which was in a quiet range overall, but this backwardation, as I'm looking at it today, has gone out to $800. Now, I'm talking about 3 months tin at 8,700, and the backwardation is 800. dollars. That's what's that, about 9.5%, almost 9.5%. So this is really, really enormous. Now, the 3 months tin is in a tight sideways trading range, and I can only think of one script that makes sense that would be causing this situation. And I certainly don't think it's that China or some other consuming country of these metals is scrambling for the position. What I suspect happened is that when the metals were all falling out of bed, I suspect that some hedge fund looked at tin and said, that one hasn't gone, it will be next, and established a very large short position in tin, which the LME ring dealing members would have recognized. Now, this is pure surmise on my part, but it's guesswork, in other words, but it's logical. It may not be true, but it's logical that this would happen. It would make sense. Say some hedge fund would have established a big short position in tin. The LME ring dealers who make the market there would have seen this and banded together to squeeze whoever had that short position. Has that ever happened before? You bet it has. And that's leading to the very, very big backwardation. I don't know how this will play out, but I've still got my tin position. I'm still long my tin position. Okay, that's pretty much it. So, have an excellent evening.